Hi, everybody. Thank you for having me today. I'm going to be presenting on a project that I worked on in Abidjan, Côte d'Ivoire, with a team of researchers. And the title of our study is What Factors Contribute to Intimate Partner Violence Against Women in Urban Conflict-Affected Settings? Qualitative Findings from Abidjan, Côte d'Ivoire. I have no relationships to disclose. I want to just start by thanking, there were a lot of people that were involved in this project, not the least of which were the women and men who participated in our focus groups. I also have to just mention the research team in Côte d'Ivoire, implementing partners were the International Rescue Committee. Our donor was the United States Institute of Peace, and my co-PIs were Drs. Jhumka Gupta and Catherine Faw. So I'm going to use the sort of standard way of going through a research presentation. I'll give you a little bit about the background and the conceptualization of the study, the methods, the results, some of the limitations, and the implications that we found for policy and practice. So as many of you hopefully in this room know, intimate partner violence is a common form of gender-based violence that greatly affects a number of women in the world. According to a recent WHO report, 1 in 3 women report lifetime physical or sexual IPV globally. IPV is experienced in a range of forms. You know, it can be physical, sexual, psychological, or economic violence. And it also comes with a range of negative physical and mental health outcomes. There's a new and growing literature that provides evidence that women in conflict-affected areas are at high risk of intimate partner violence. In fact, despite the common belief that sexual violence is the biggest concern for women in conflict, this literature suggests that IPV may actually be more widespread than other forms of gender-based violence and may actually increase during conflict. The literature also points to a number of contributing factors for intimate partner violence in these settings. Stress as a result of financial insecurity, men's perceived loss of status as a result of changing gender roles, and the idea that in settings that are affected by conflict, that violence may be a more acceptable tactic for conflict resolution. These are all really important contributions to our understanding of the types of violence that women are experiencing in conflict, but they have a limitation in the sense that the majority of the work has been done in rural contexts. But as we know, and as the colleague who first presented, the world is urbanizing. According to UN projections, by 2050, 6.4 billion people, or 66% of the global population, will live in cities. Nearly 90% of this growth will be in Africa and Asia. And this certainly has implications for conflicts, their aftermath, and the humanitarian response. According to a recent Overseas Development Institute report, currently 59% of refugees are living in cities. So sort of, and this number is rising. So the iconic image of the tented rural refugee camp no longer entirely reflects the image of post-conflict settings. So there's definitely a need for a better understanding of the aftermath of conflicts in urban areas. So Abidjan provides such a context. Côte d'Ivoire experienced a civil war in the early 2000s that subsided in 2004, but was still politically and economically unstable through most of the 2000s. In 2010, the violence arose again following a contested presidential election. And during this conflict, the violence was concentrated in two of Côte d'Ivoire's urban centers, in Abidjan and in Yamoussoukro. This was an intense conflict that left more than 3,000 people dead, tens of thousands of people displaced, and these two urban areas socioeconomically devastated. So the conceptualization of our study was informed in part by this gap in understanding of what happens in post-conflict settings that are in urban areas, but also as a result of research that was happening in Côte d'Ivoire at the time, both by the research team that I worked with, but also other researchers. So Hossein and colleagues found that 60% of rural Ivorian women reported lifetime IPV. That's much greater than the global average that I talked about earlier. So there was some concern that this was likely an issue also in urban areas. At the same time, the research team that I worked with on this project was just wrapping up a 3-year randomized controlled trial on an intervention that used village savings and loans associations in conjunction with gender dialogue discussion groups as a prevention strategy for IPV. So there was an interest in country and an interest within International Rescue Committee to understand if a project like this, if there was a need for and what the feasibility of doing a project like this in an urban area would be in Cote d'Ivoire. So in light of these sort of intersecting factors, the goal of the research was to qualitatively examine the social and structural characteristics of the urban environment that contribute to the experiences of intimate partner violence among women affected by this conflict. So essentially, like, we wanted to drive home the idea that sexual violence is not the only type of violence that women are experiencing in conflict-affected settings, and that there is a lack of understanding of what happens in urban areas following a conflict. So we did 10 focus groups with 46 women and 45 men. We included both people who had been displaced and those who had not. The only eligibility criteria was that participants needed to be over 18 years old and French-speaking. Participants were recruited in 3 separate neighborhoods in Abidjan. We worked with community centers who facilitated meetings to recruit participants. The focus groups were led by our Ivorian staff. They used semi-structured guides to facilitate the focus groups, and myself and another colleague used grounded theory and open coding to do the data analysis, and we used TI as our analytics software. It's important to note just briefly that we use a ecological model as a guiding framework for our study. This particular model was adapted by Anand Breer to point out the points of exposure and armed conflict that affect women in IPV. So the idea was to just be attuned to the fact in designing the study that there are factors at all these levels that intersect with intimate partner violence experience, and particularly following a conflict. So these are the main themes that arose out of the focus groups, and I'll go into them in more depth as I move on through the presentation. But we found poverty and financial stress in a crisis-affected city was really a salient theme. Changing gender roles and tensions between traditional and modern gender norms. There was a lack of social support in the city. There was a lot of IPV stigma in Abidjan. And we found that people who had been displaced were experiencing some of the most severe vulnerabilities to things like poverty and food insecurity, but also to intimate partner violence. So participants identified widespread unemployment and rising costs of food and housing as a major consequence of the conflict. This was exacerbated by their lack of social safety nets, which they described as being a product of living in the city. Whereas in comparison to their rural counterparts that could rely on well water, for instance, or on small plots of land for subsistence farming or livelihood generation, they were left with no such safety nets. Participants described men's stress over this financial insecurity as a contributing factor to their use of physical and emotional violence. So, for instance, this male participant says, "It's worth saying that in the city there are a lot of realities. Life standard is higher down here. That's it. Everything is charged, water, everything. This is what makes us feel most the financial effect of the crisis. This causes a lot of violence. It makes it difficult for most people to handle this situation. Some just accept their situation, as my brother put it, and are able to communicate with their wives. On the contrary, other people can't stand it. They're under stress, so they hit their wives. They quarrel for the slightest thing." In line with other studies of post-conflict settings, we found that participants experienced a shift in household responsibilities and household gender norms as a result of the post-conflict economic constraints, such that women became primary earners and assumed more responsibilities in the household and more decision-making power. Women saw this as an opportunity for autonomy, whereas men perceived this shift as negative and as a challenge to their status as the head of household. In some situations, men's resistance to the shift appeared to influence their use of violence against women. Participants described the violence as arising from men's frustration with their unemployment situation, disapproval of women's new independence, and having their masculine identity challenged. And this, in the quote on the left here, a female participant says, the husband is violent, aggressive, he's every time edgy because it's hard for him to accept that his wife is now the one to take care of him and the whole family. And the quote on the right reiterates this. Essentially, women were taking on this role as primary earners, and men were having a really hard time dealing with the fact that their status as head of household was changing. And a ton of participants described this as a reason or sort of a catalyst for the violence that women were experiencing. We also saw the influence of gender norms play out in another way. There was a lot of discussion about the tension between the modern gender norms of the city and the more traditional gender norms of the rural areas. So women who lived in the city were perceived by both men and women as more eager for equality and more aware of their rights, whereas their rural counterparts were considered more submissive and naive. This was seen as both a risk and protective factor for women in the city. So some people would say that women would avoid intimate partner violence because they were more empowered, whereas other people would say that this is precisely the catalyst for intimate partner violence. Following the conflict, in part because of crisis-related displacement, communities were fractured, and a lot of participants described feeling socially isolated in the city and far from friends and family, and that they were not receiving support from their community members. This was a really salient theme throughout our focus groups. This had implications for intimate partner violence help seeking. So in the first quote, a woman says, in the village, there's more social cohesion. Your parents are often around. They can talk to your husband if there's any issue in the couple. In town, parents are usually not around. They have no idea of what you may go through in your household unless you explain to them yourself. If you don't open your mouth, nobody will know what's going on in the couple. Similarly, a male participant says, in the village, when the situation is tough between a man and a wife, the woman can resort to the elder person in the family. In Abidjan, members of the extended family don't see each other. For them to meet, it's difficult and rare, so there's a lack of consultation. But in the village, the chief of the family intervenes and the couple are united anew. But that situation does not apply in Abidjan. These quotes just indicate that women and men felt isolated from the resources that they commonly turn to for support in intimate partner violence situations. In tandem with the social isolation that people were feeling in the city, they also described experiencing stigma related to IPV in their communities. Stigma was not only described as pervasive, but also sort of facilitated by the built environment. So they talked a lot about how living in crowded, cramped housing, where the boundary between private space and public space was sort of blurred, really facilitated the stigma that they were experiencing as enacted by their neighbors. Women who experienced IPV were also regularly experiencing re-victimization at the hands of their community members. In a neighborhood characterized by social trust and social cohesion, we would expect that public exposure of abuse would incite people to intervene. But in our sample, we found that more often than not, women were re-victimized if people knew about their abuse. So in this quote, a female participant says, we're in urban areas here. We're living in common courtyard houses. In these kinds of houses, you can't really have a private life. The houses are so close together and the courtyard is common, so everybody will hear what's happened in your household. If your husband batters you all the time, everyone will know and you'll no longer be respected by the neighbors. Even their children will disrespect you. That's why we're so concerned with others' eyes. They talked a lot about being under the other's eyes gaze. It was also reported that men capitalized on this situation by actually deliberately perpetrating intimate partner violence in public. So as one female participant says, if he wants to humiliate you, it will be in front of people. He'll never insult you in the house. Finally, IDPs were described as suffering some of the most extreme social and financial marginalization. They found it challenging to integrate into these new communities that had unfamiliar cultures, unfamiliar religion, and new customs. At the same time, they were experiencing prejudice by local residents in the communities in which they were settling. So they were rumored to be desperate people who had STIs as a result of rape during conflict. And there was also a lot of suspicion that they were spies for the opposition, because this was a political conflict. This sort of discrimination was believed to be a key obstacle for securing well-being for themselves and their families, magnifying their vulnerability to poverty and food insecurity. And participants described this sort of compound stressors as contributing to the violence perpetrated against women. A male participant describes this scenario: "I moved to a place I do not know, with my family, with my children, with other expenses, and I won't know what to expect and what not to expect. For housing, how am I going to manage? So I have no income, no savings. How am I going to find an activity? All of these thoughts make the man anxious, and this cannot favor harmony in the family." The results of the study should be interpreted with a few limitations in mind. Certainly the findings are not generalizable beyond the communities within which we participated. Participants resided in low-income communities and may have been uniquely susceptible to the consequences of the crisis. Findings may be subject to a social desirability bias, and that participants may have downplayed their experiences of intimate partner violence, or the data quality may have suffered if the participants found the topics to be too sensitive to discuss. And it's worth noting also that the rural-urban comparisons were told through the lens of the urban dwellers, so they don't reflect necessarily the ways in which rural people perceive themselves or people from the city. And just some sort of takeaways that we came up with for implications for policy and practice in urban conflict-affected settings with women is essentially the experience of intimate partner violence in these settings occurs at the nexus between economic deprivation, changing social norms, fractured social supports, and displacement. So future prevention efforts should definitely be multidimensional. One of the interventions that the previous research team had done in rural setting could actually be adapted in an urban environment. That's the Rural Savings and Loans Programs for women. It's an economic empowerment intervention, but we know that economic empowerment alone is not enough to prevent IPV, so the idea is that this would be coupled with other program components that challenge household gender inequitable norms. Lack of supportive resources for IPV help seeking was one of the most salient themes in the study, so prioritizing strengthening formal and informal support networks and services for urban women is important. These can include mobile response teams for gender-based violence, which are essentially community health workers that go into a city and can provide services on-site or can facilitate access to services outside of their communities. And finally, interventions should be closely targeted, tailored, and monitored for IDPs, because at least we found that this is a population that is uniquely vulnerable to the aftermath of conflict. I just want to take 1 second to thank and acknowledge the rest of the research team. I worked with researchers at George Mason, Dr. Gupta, and Dr. Sarah Schumann at LaSalle, and we had 3 people from International Rescue Committee also working on this project. Thank you very much.